Welcome to Sozo Talk Radio, the show where the host is too lazy to even pronounce so-so accurately. This is the most amazingly average to almost slightly better than mediocre broadcast that will be sure to astound you with impressive interviews and talk. Blah, 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 blah. Are they gone? Good. You can never be too careful. Illuminati spies are everywhere. But thankfully, they have notoriously low attention spans, and so it was necessary to fake them out with that utterly boring intro. Sozo is, in fact, a secret code word for soteriological bliss and existential ecstasy that can only be found in relationship with and in childlike abandonment to our loving Heavenly Papa and our Master and Commander, the Good Shepherd, and our salvation, Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus, the Messiah. I am your host, Daniel Lovett. Let us embark upon a glorious adventure, exploring the depths and mysteries of Christ, one interview at a time. SozoTalkRadio.com.
Welcome to Sozo Talk Radio.
Sozo Talk Radio.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on Sozo Talk Radio. On the line, I have John McMurray. He is a teacher, scholar, and nature photographer. At least that's how William Paul Young referred to you. And you have recently written a book called A Spiritual Evolution, which is an amazing, amazing book. We're going to be discussing some of this book and just about your testimony. So, John.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yes.
Glad to be with you.
Yes. I'm so delighted about this interview in particular. It's interesting because when I first heard your name recently and we got connected, I was like, John McMurray, I know that name. Where do I know that from? Yeah. And then it dawned on me, Donald Miller. And because he was such an inspiration to me when I was like trying to recover from, you know, religion that had done a number on me. Donald Miller was one of my dear friends. His writings, you wouldn't believe it. Just yesterday, my wife, she's at a thrift shop and she just randomly decided to pick me up a copy of Black Jazz because I'd given away my copy. So
that's fun. That's fun.
It'll be fun to read this again and get back into it. I remember reading this at a coffee shop and just like, it was bringing such comfort to my soul. I'm like on the verge of tears, just crying in public basically. And then a friend walks up to me and says, "Hey Daniel, how's it going?" I'm like, you just showed up at the exact wrong destroyed my enjoyment of this book. But I've really been enjoying this book. Everybody go pick up this. You can get it at aspiritualrevolution.com.
Evolution.
aspiritualevolution.com. And you can read the entire introduction to the book for free there.
Yep.
It's entitled The Monster Under My Bed, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's the name of the intro.
Yeah.
You can also get it on Amazon. That's easy for people, but it's on Amazon through a third party seller. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can't get it in 2 days. Prime doesn't work.
Yeah.
When it's a third party seller. But anyway,
you get more profit quickly if you get it at your website, right? It's kind of
I make a little more on the book. Yeah.
That's
so spoken like a true self-employed musician.
I know. So, right?
I was gonna say, two things. One about Donald. First, I thought you were going to say the name, and you were going to say John McMurray, the philosopher. So if you go like on Amazon and type in my name, his books will come up probably before mine do. Because he was a philosopher that had a lot of shaped, I don't know if you know the name, T.F. Torrance or J.B. Torrance, the Torrance brothers from Scotland. Anyway, I thought that's what you were going to say. But then when you said Don, I was like, oh my gosh, Don. Yeah. Like, cause he's written like whatever, six books or whatever. And he lived with us for 4 years, and
yeah,
so he's like amazing. Family.
Now, how did that happen? How did this happen that Donald Miller came to live with you? I mean, I visited Portland. Let me tell you a really quick story about that. I visited Portland, and my friend and I were both, you know, into reading Donald Miller, and we went to the church that Donald Miller attended. It was being held at a school at the time.
Yeah, Imago Dei.
Imago Dei. There you go.
That's the name of it.
And so while we were there, as the craziest thing happened, we went, we were sitting in the back, and I look over, and there's my uncle. And my uncle lives like 300 miles away in, you know, near Spokane, Washington. That's where I grew up in Spokane.
Really?
Yeah.
That's where my son lives.
Oh, really? That's amazing.
Yeah, he went to Whitworth, and now he's going to Gonzaga.
Whitworth. That was just up the road from where we lived, Whitworth. And I remember seeing you, you spoke there recently.
Yeah, actually, that was a little over a year ago. We were at Whitworth and Gonzaga both. Paul and Baxter Kruger and I were speaking there.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, so...
Anyway, you see your uncle at Imago Dei.
Oh, yes, I see him, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then we're like causing this scene in the back, you know, because like find each other. Like I'm, you know, traveling there from Wisconsin. We didn't tell each other we're going to be there. He's just there visiting that church because one of his son-in-laws was interested in checking out that church, and I was too. So we were there and we connected, had lunch, and it was cool. But yeah, I would really love to hear the story about Donald Miller and how he came to live with you.
And I want to hear the story of how you got from Spokane to Wisconsin. So
yeah.
Because I don't know if I think I'd rather live in the West, but that's just me. Anyway, Don, if you read the very first book that he published was called Prayer in the Art of Volkswagen Maintenance.
Yes.
And he tells the story of he and a friend of his moving from Houston up to Portland. And so when he moved to Portland, he got a job, and he happened to work with a guy who had a publishing company. And the publishing company did mostly like homeschool books and stuff like that. And a friend of mine worked there. And I, at the time, was leading kind of a college/singles group. And we would meet in our home. And I don't know, we'd have 50 kids show up and sit on the floor and we would just talk. And Don started coming with my friend because he didn't really know anybody in Portland. So mm-hmm. he started attending and we became friends. And he was looking for a place to stay. And actually he tells a story, I forget which book it's in. I walked into the kitchen, which is right behind me, and he was in the refrigerator. And I looked at him, he said, Terry said I could make a sandwich. And I said, okay, you might as well live here then. So that's when he moved in. So wow. we have a little apartment above the garage, like kind of an in-law thing, is what they call it. And so he lived up there for about 4 years.
Yeah, so, that's cool. He's got a beautiful heart, and I've read all of his writings. So and in fact, I was reading your book and I came across this part about prejudice. You were talking about prejudice, and I'm like, and I was thinking two pages before you said it, I was thinking about the lifeboat analogy that Donald Miller puts in one of his books, the Searching for God Knows What book. He talks about all that, and like, he talks about the cool and beautiful club, and like, well, God really loves everybody. He doesn't leave anybody out. This is, you know, this whole thing. But then I read it in your book, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is probably where he got it from you or whatever, or maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, well, we talked about it a lot, that whole analogy of the lifeboat. And for me, it just, I think, how do I say this? Like, in growing up, the gospel that I was told was rooted in the assumption that God was morally prejudiced toward us. So in other words, if you're good, then he likes you, everything's okay. If you're not, then you've got problems. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and I go, wait a minute, he's not morally prejudiced. He's not prejudiced about anything. So.
Yeah, I love how. Well, even your this tagline on one of your websites, the Open Table Conference website, "God is better than we imagine." Now, tell me about your Open Table Conference coming to Portland, June 7th through 9th. People can find that at opentableconference.com if they want to check it out. Tell us about that and what you hope to accomplish through that and how long that's been going on.
Sure. That started out of a thing that I do called Northwest School of Theology, which started in 2007. And that originally, Daniel, was just my attempt at trying to help people grow deeper. You know, back in the day when people wanted to go deeper, the recommendation was go to Bible college or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, what if we just did something where it was kind of an intensive and invited people to take part in that. So I started doing that, and I actually did that over for some friends who live in Slovenia over in Europe. We put one together, and I remember flying home from Slovenia thinking, like, I don't know anybody who's doing this in the States. Not that it's not being done, but I don't know of anybody in our area that's doing something like this. So I kind of put that together, and that was 2007. Mm-hmm. Right before we did it, I'm trying to remember the exact timeline here, but because it's kind of cool how this ties together. Right before I did it, Paul Young published The Shack in May of 2007. Our first school of theology was September, and so it had only been out for 4 months. He literally was selling them out of the trunk of his car. Mm-hmm. And here's a great marketing thing. The only way you could get the book, besides knowing Paul and getting him out of the trunk of his car, was from a website. And the only way you could get the website, it was in the back of the book. So it's like, okay, how am I going to know about a website from a book that I'm trying to get when the only place I can find out about the website's in the book? And so I had a guy give it to me. I was speaking at a Sunday school class at church. And afterwards he came up to me and he said, "Have you heard about this book?" And I said, "No." He says, "Well, it's a local guy." And he says, "I think you'd really like it." He says, "You sound like it." Mm-hmm. And I kind of shrugged and went, okay, whatever. A week later, I go back, teach the class again. He comes up afterwards and he has the book in his hand, The Shack. And this is September. So it's like literally 4 months. It's been out for 4 months. Mm-hmm. He insists that I take it with him. So I take it with me right after the first school of theology. So like right after that, I did school of theology, and then I went on a photo trip because I do photography. That's my vocation. It's my job. And I took it with me, and I had an experience very much like yours with Blue Lake Jazz, in that I was in Moab, Utah. And I had gotten up super early, shot the sunrise out in Arches National Park, and had come back, gone back to sleep for about an hour, and then went to, it's called the Moab Brewery. It's the only brew pub in the town. And it was 11 o'clock and they had just opened. So I went over I hadn't had breakfast or lunch. So I went over to get lunch. And I was walking in and I remembered, oh yeah, like that book. So I ran back to the car and I got the book and I sat there and read the whole thing in mm-hmm. one sitting, cried several times in the restaurant, publicly, but I didn't know anybody there. I didn't have any friends walk up to me and say, "Hey, what are you doing?" But I sat there till like almost six in the evening. I read the whole book. And so that was 2007. So the very next school of theology, I invited Paul to speak at it. So before he comes and speaks at it, we had started meeting regularly because we lived near each other. We didn't know each other, but we lived like 15 minutes apart. But we had started meeting and talking, and I was teaching part-time at a school called Multnomah University. It used to be called Multnomah Bible College. And I was teaching there, and I'd had him come and teach in the classes and stuff. And so we met up one time. I'm trying to remember what it was. It wasn't far, but I remember him asking me, had I ever heard of a guy named Baxter Kruger? And I said, no. And he says, well, he loves the Gospel of John like you do. And I go, really? Mm-hmm. So he says, oh, I got a book of his. I want you to read it. I want you to tell me what you think. So he ran out to the car, got a book by Baxter Kruger. It was called Across All Worlds. And it's a thin paperback. I took it home and read it. And like I was just, it was blowing my circuits apart. I was going, you got to be kidding. Like, so there was part of me that was going, yes, yes, yes. And then the whole intellectual academic side was like, well, what about kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there was this kind of struggle going on. And so long story short, he ends up doing a conference with Baxter because the Shack at that point, this is now not quite a year later, this is 2008 and it's probably like April and it's starting to take off. Like they're starting to fly off the shelves, so to speak. And so they do this conference together in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi. And Paul says, I said, I'd love to meet him. You should go, want to go? And I go, yeah. So he calls Baxter and says, yeah, bring him. So I come down and I met Baxter. We stayed up till 3 a.m. talking about the Gospel of John. Paul fell asleep in the chair and we became great friends. And so the two of them came to SOT in September of 2008. And we started doing that regularly, a couple times a year. So out of that, we said, because I limit SOT to 20 people, because that's the best, I found that that's a really, I won't say the best, but it's a really good environment for dialogue and conversation, people to get to know each other, to be honest and open in a safe place. And it gives them personal access to these guys to talk with them and get to know them. So, sorry, that's my dog barking at somebody. So we basically said, you know, if we do this, even if we did this 10 times a year, that's 200 people that we would talk to. And I personally, I don't care. That's fine with me. But they're like, well, at the time, Baxter in 2012 wrote a book called The Shack Revisited, where he talks about the theology of the Shack. Mm-hmm. And right before that, in November of 2011, Paul wrote his second book called Crossroads. So those two things were coming out, and they said, you know, we think that there's just going to be a ton of people that are going to want to be a part of this conversation. We should do something bigger. And I said no probably 15 times, and then finally said, and I don't even know what changed my mind other than I think the Spirit tapped me on the head probably 15 times, this time harder. And I went, okay. So we came up with the Open Table Conference. The idea of the Open Table was that it's got, actually it's a multifaceted metaphor, but the idea being the table is there's a place for everybody at the table, regardless of who you are, what your background is, what you believe, or anything like that. And you belong there. And it's the Lord's table. Kind of like Rublev's icon, you know, there's a place at the table for you. And no question is off limits, no question is stupid or dumb or anything like that. And so the idea is that we don't want this to just be kind of a lecture thing, because it's not like feel like we have an agenda. It's like we want to talk about this and specifically about Jesus Christ, because he's more beautiful than we ever thought he was. And so we want to set the table and then actually enter into dialogue and conversation with you, as opposed to just giving you information, because this is about relationship. This isn't about education.
Right.
Not that education's bad, but it's only a means to, or part of a means to. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea of Open Table. And we did our first We did our first ones in 2013, and they were great. I lost a boatload of money because I didn't know what I was doing. But we've worked that out, and so we've been doing them now for the last, this will be the seventh year. And we do one every year in Portland because Paul and I live here. Because at the beginning, we said, what makes Open Table Open Table? Well, what we said was, we'll guarantee that regardless of who else comes, Paul Young, Baxter Kruger, and John McMurray will be there. And then whoever else, that's great. That's just going to make the conversation better. But those three guys will be there because we're kind of going to do this together. And they said, great. So we have been.
Yeah. And this year you have Brad Jerzak coming.
Yeah.
Who I interviewed, one of my more recent interviews, and Kenneth Tanner, who I'm just connecting with, per your recommendation, through your book. I was kept seeing his name and I was like, oh, Kenneth Tanner. And then I remembered, oh my gosh, Kenneth Tanner, he's coming to speak at your Open Table conference. So that's amazing.
And others as well. But yeah, those guys, are all coming. And yeah, if you get a chance, I think as you begin to read stuff that, Kenneth is I hesitate to use the word priest. I guess he would say that. He's Father Kenneth. And he's in the Anglican Church, and so he wears his collar everywhere. But he's just he's just a great guy, and he writes so beautifully and effortlessly. Like you're gonna like him. You're gonna like him. He's just a great, great guy.
Yeah. So. I would love to read something by him because actually, as we were in conversation, you mentioned that your chapter 14 about Jesus, the epic story, the drama of Jesus, was written with kind of Kenneth's writing inspiration in mind. And I was like mesmerized during chapter 14. I was just lost in it, and it was just beautiful.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, it's funny because the actual writing of the book, that's another whole story on its own, but I knew that I wanted to write and basically, because a lot of the book, Daniel, is I'm not telling people, I'm not trying to teach them what to believe or anything like that. It's really a lot of questions. These were my questions, and these questions led me, number one, to recognize that the story or the narrative that I was in was no longer tenable. It wasn't sustainable. I was trying to follow, trust, love a God who was very much like a monster to me. Mm-hmm. And which, so there was this love-fear relationship, and not fear in a good sense of awe, but fear and like, I'm scared to death of you. So that made it really hard to trust. And so the book is just really a lot of questions that I asked and thinking through those. And so when I got to the end, I knew I wanted to talk about the incarnation because the incarnation is the thing that changed everything for me, which sounds really weird coming from a Bible teacher who's been in this story, in the evangelical story, for decades. But I had some real misunderstandings about the incarnation, and just coming to terms with that in a better way, I knew I wanted to say, okay, this is where my journey's brought me. So here's where I'm at. Okay. And so I struggled for, oh gosh, a really long time. Like, how am I going to write this chapter? And I didn't know Kenneth. And I saw a post that he wrote on Facebook, and I read it and I went, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. And so I responded to it, and not much anything. And then I was maybe a week or two later, I saw another post, and it too was beautiful. And it was about, I don't even remember what it was about, but there's a line that I actually quote in chapter 14, because he hadn't published it anywhere. It was only on Facebook. So I wrote him and said, may I have your permission to quote you? But I don't know where you wrote this. I don't have a source. He goes, well, I just put it in the post. I said, well, do I have your permission? He said, yeah. And then, and I told him, I said, I want you to know that the Spirit just tapped me on the shoulder and said, this is how you've got to write this chapter. Hmm. And so it's, you'll find, and I think this is what you were alluding to. Chapter 14 is much more poetic in its style and the way I'm trying to write, because I'm trying to get past the words to our emotion, to our gut level relationship with this person. And because in a phrase, what's captured my heart is beauty, and it's the beauty of who God is. And that's captured my heart. And so I didn't want to communicate like, okay, so here's where I'm at, just as kind of this theological position. Mm-hmm. I wanted to communicate it in the beauty of how it had gripped me. And when I read Kenneth, I went, that's it. I've got to do this poetically. So that's how I say he inspired the way I wrote chapter 14.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And
thanks.
And really where we've come from, I mean, looking back, like, because I've been through a lot of this journey that you describe in your book, that the shack really helped me along in my journey. You know, as I responded to that, I was realizing, oh my gosh, this is exposing that I've, you know, I grew up in the Christian church, but it seemed there was this theology that existed that taught that, you know, behind the curtain, there's this monster God, that the God of wrath, that Jesus came to intercede for us, you know, on behalf of, you know, to good cop, bad cop kind of thing. And that's, I was like, Jesus, yeah, you're okay. I'll pray to Jesus. I know you tell us to pray to your Father, but I don't know about him. Don't leave me in the room with him, you know, alone.
Yep.
You're okay, Jesus, though. And really, we, you know, even Paul Young, he was asked, this is funny, when he was asked by a reporter, so what do you have to say about these famous atheists and their position? And he responds, I agree with them. You know, the God that they say don't exist, I don't believe exists either, you know? And it's just so interesting. So Brad Jerzak, in his afterward, he quotes Kenneth Tanner and says, who says, apostasy can be a good thing. To hear the gospel, we first need to abandon the false gospels we were taught. Unlike the ancients who had to unlearn the worship of idols, contemporary persons must reject the distorted projections of Christ with which we were raised, and the Father too, for that matter. Thank you for joining us for this first part of an interview with John McMurray and his book, A Spiritual Evolution. You can read the introduction for free and find out what that book's all about at aspiritualevolution.com. Highly recommendable. Be sure to subscribe to this channel at sozotalkradio.com. You'll find links to the Facebook page, to iTunes account, to our YouTube channel there at Sozo Talk Radio. Subscribe so that you won't miss out on future episodes, future editions of this interview, along with many other great content interviews that I'll be bringing your way. I would like to thank Fringe Radio Network for hosting this program. And if you would like to support Sozo Talk Radio, you can do so at patreon.com/reflectworship. You can listen to the music that we are making at reflectworship.com or reflect.bandcamp.com. Thanks a lot.